Welcome to the Stanley Street Social Podcast presented by MAP. My name's Alex Clements. I'm here with Campbell Flakemore, Riley Hart on the video, and a couple of
clowns sitting in the lounge room.
Hanger honorers, fanboys. Today we're doing our normal unpack show. And to kick things off, Campbell, what do we need to know from the last 2 weeks? It's almost been...
There's been a lot of racing, hasn't there? But not a whole lot of news. Racing-wise, I guess San Remo is probably the biggest race that's taken place. And the big dog, the king of the season, really, Julian Alaphilippe, took the chockies ahead of Oliver Nason, who has also had a super season, and Kwiatkowski in third. So, I don't know. It wasn't a... It never really is a super exciting race until the last 20, 30K, is it really?
It's a bit how you going. I think we might touch on this in the main segment a bit later about my full views on the race and where it should go. But as a whole, in terms of the results, the sprinters weren't really there. It was more the part-time boys, and Tekerny Quickstep just continued their winning fashion.
Well, there was a bit of a tailwind up the climb, which made it super quick. I think it was maybe the second fastest time up the Poggio. So, yeah, too hard for the sprinters. Obviously, Caleb Ewan, one of the big pre-race favourites that we talked a lot about in the last podcast, didn't quite get over the climb in the front. He ended up in 29th in the kind of the rest of the best of the rest, and didn't really feature in that gallop either. So, I reckon he'd be a little bit disappointed. He talked a lot about it. That was the first half of the season building towards that. So I guess he looks towards the tour now.
Yeah, it was a bigger milestone he's been talking about. That we were talking about the week before, that he was putting a lot of pressure on himself to do something in this race, and unfortunately it didn't play out for him. But if you look at the result sheet, it's all the Mahorics. Simone Clark got himself onto the back of the bunch. Peter Sagan. There was no real traditional sprinters there. The closest one was really Christoph, who was 27 seconds off the back, who won the best of the rest.
Trentin was there as well. You were happy to see him not get the chockies.
Yeah. But then also Michael Matthews too, kind of, which you'll probably talk about later in his form later on, started to show some good signs after, I guess, a bit of a tricky start to the season. But then Catalunya, like, it's kind of sums up cycling, just messy. Like, Catalunya's on now, and then, or was on, then E3 was on at the same time, then goes in and get well again. It's just...
Said you weren't a fan of Catalunya. You were like, just couldn't get interested in Catalunya.
It's just a bit hard. Like, it's just a bit hard to know what's going on. It's just a mess. It's not like round one, round two, round three. It's a bit of this there, like spring classic season, but then you got week-long stage races in there with, like, even though Catalunya had a genuine start list, like, if you look at the riders on the list, there were some big GC names. It just, like, I was looking at the stat sheet, but I wasn't really tuning into the races. Just kind of kept tabs on E3 and Gent-Wevelgem.
May as well go through Catalunya anyway. It was Lopez that won. Astana, another GC. I'm not sure how many that is now, but it's a lot. A. Yates in second, Bernal in third, and like you said, there's Quintana, Kreuzweig, Woods, Micah, all the big names there, and Michael Matthews, like you said, picked up two stage wins, and Richie Porte, he was actually there, funnily enough.
Believe it or not.
He finished in 38th, so with him, it's either like he'll win it, or he'll just get like 150th, he won't care, but 38th, it's a weird kind of... It's a weird place, isn't it?
He's in no man's land. Yeah. We had that illness ruled him out of Paris-Nice, and then I guess we had that form from his red hot Australian summer, which he's always moving in, hasn't really carried on. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes to from now and what he does. Not an ideal place to be in, trying to find so much form.
E3 Heilbeke, what's now E3 Bink Bank Classic. Quickstep one again, Alex.
Yeah. Well, they're in that position that they find themselves in so often, where they have Bob Young was up the road chasing, Steve Arles was there in a small group. Young was gets brought back, Steve Arlett wins a bunch kick. Like they're
GVA
just, they're,
does too much.
Yeah, pretty traditional. And Wu Van Aert, he's been pretty busy and he's been really good, but always similar to GVA fashion, always doing a heap of work.
Well, he's relatively new to the road, yeah, though, isn't he? Like he's a cyclocross king.
And strong as an ox.
Still, yeah, like he's so strong. Like third in Strada, six Milan San Remo, second in Bink Bank, and he's done five races on the road this year, so... he's only 24 and he's gone full time to the road. So I think next couple of years he's going to be like the new classics king.
He's
I think
a proper talent. But yeah, just to kind of quick step, putting themselves in the right position and just winning. That's all they do, yeah. Win.
And the most recent one was Gent Wevelgem last night. They averaged 46, I think. No real breakaway. It was just racing all day, all night, crosswinds. Groups going up the road, teams not being represented. So eventually it all kind of came back for a, I think it was about a 30-up bunch kick. And Christoph, he's bringing back his 2015 form where he was unbeatable. Originally he was kind of doing the lead out for Gaviria. That was the plan. And in the post-race interview he said that Gaviria was, he had bad legs. So it was all for Christoph. And then you see the overhead of the sprint and Gaviria, with about 300 to go, comes onto Christoph's wheel, and then as soon as he opens up the sprint, just drops it, and Viviani's the one that he chops up. Viviani gets boxed out, runs 20th, and no one got close to Christoph.
I was a fan of Gaviria, but I'm a huge fan of him after his performance there.
I thought you were going to say, well, I'm not a fan for chopping.
No, I like it a lot. Well, first of all, he said, I'm not good, when like pre, it was all about Christoph's letting him out, which is not a bad lead-out man to have. So he could have rolled the dice and gone, oh, I might be all right on this kick. So he said, I'm not good enough. And then he has done the reverse lead out, chopped Viviani, who was probably one of the hot contenders to roll Christoph in that sprint. He's perfect.
Mm. Big exactly. Fan. What more can you ask someone that is already buckled but will still try and do something for the team? Could have easily just sat on the back, thought, yeah, nah, I'm the leader of this team.
I don't mind that at all.
But yeah, Christoph, he's a danger man. When he is fit, he's a genuine Viking. He'll dust up pretty much anyone in a bunch kick of 10 to 20. Mm. If I was the other favourites for Flanders and Roubaix, I'd be a little bit worried that he's coming into some top shape.
John Degenkolb too, second.
And Nathan third.
Yeah. Pretty traditional.
And I think the name that probably stands out the most in that top 10 is Mathieu van der Poel.
Mm.
Protege.
And do you watch the race?
I just watched the highlights this morning.
It looked like Jumbo Visma had men everywhere to only run fifth with Danny van Poppel.
He loves the top 10, doesn't he? I'm actually going to click on him and see when the last time he won a race. So we won 1.1 in Belgium in October last year. So
yeah,
I imagine there wasn't too much going on. Got close a couple of times in the Vuelta. And then the last win before that was a 1.1 in Belgium in June. So no big wins for Van Poppel, who's always around the mark, but just can't quite jag that big W.
Thanks, Campbell. Moving on to the main body of this podcast, our take, our three talking points this week are Coppi, Bardiali, Milan-San Remo as a race, and Green Edge in terms of their climbing inventory they've got built up now and where they take that. First things first, Coppi, Bardiali, in-house, what do you call him?
I can see in-house. Tom actually just getting a little bit nervous over there. He's got his hands in his pockets. He's suddenly starting to move around a little bit. But yeah, we do have the winner of Settimana Coppi Bardiali. His brother's actually in the house this afternoon. Knows him probably better than most. Wouldn't say they have, I wouldn't say they get on like a house on fire. Tom's diced him up. Not going to go visit him in Europe, which is pretty poor, I would have thought. But anyway, it was a super win. He's won a week-long stage race. Team Sky were there, Movie Star were there, Education First. So they were the world tour teams, but we know what racing in Italy is like. It's hard, it's tough circuits, it's hilly.
You've got all those random Italian teams there.
There's blokes that are willing to risk their lives. Yeah. And to come through that unscathed win against someone like Mikel Landa, who we know is he's a world leader, Alex. He's a world leader.
And so they won the team time trial. They put them in prime.
That set it up perfectly. That was, you know, the crux of this tour. They won it by 10 seconds ahead of Team Sky, and Movistar were 27 seconds off the pace. So that set up the foundations for the win.
But then also, when Landa went on stage three, Lucas was on the wheel. He was the only one that went with him.
He was the only one that could follow. Yeah.
So he won the race. Yeah. He came second on the stage, got his doors blown off a bit in the last little pinch up to the line. But I think it shows a lot that he kept his composure. It wouldn't have been easy having Landa breathing down your neck. He had, I think it was about a 20-second buffer, so not a huge amount of time.
Mm.
If things went pear-shaped and two hilly circuits to defend on, so...
But it doesn't come as a surprise, really. We saw how good he was at TDU and then Sun Tour. So it shouldn't really be too much of a surprise. And I think if you convert the form into wins, you get a lot of confidence out of that.
And he seemed like he grew up, he was a lot more mature this summer in his way, paired for things. He's just been at altitude for the last month or so. So, man, things look like they're going well for him. And they need to be going well for him to get starts in that team now.
Well... Yeah, it's a logjam, isn't it?
Yeah,
and it's not like they're going to Grandies now. Just, you know, we might get a podium. Like, that'll be a bonus. It's like we're going there to win. We have guys that can win. If you're picked on that team, you're gonna have a lot of responsibility. Whether you're a ruler or you're a climber, you're gonna have jobs on every day. So it's not like they really gonna send guys there just for the XP points. It's like you're gonna be going there and you got a lot of responsibility. So hopefully he gets a gig in the Giro off the back of that. So
we might have a few comments from him if he pulls through on the message.
Yeah, well, he's busy now.
Yeah, now he's a busy rider. Yeah.
Plenty of FIFA as well, so
he's got
jobs on.
So Lucas has come through with a nice little clip which we'll play to you now, where he talks about the race, Coppa Bartali, a bit of preparation before then and what he's got coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Hey mate, yeah, just reading your questions now. Just finished a stint in Andorra at altitude. Was a good one actually. Got through it without getting sick or having to miss any days through any injuries or health issues. So it's always good when you get the work done up there because it pays dividends when you come back down to racing. So. Had a good time up there actually, and I think it's paid off, and it was a good block. Year two, feeling more confident. I wouldn't say confident, I'd say comfortable, a little bit more comfortable in my place in Girona, and I also stay in my place in Andorra. It's my own place, so it always makes it a bit nicer to stay at your own place, but also just with more familiar with, you know, the process of going to the race I did last year, Coppa Bartali I did last year, so I knew some of the circuits, and then also just knowing the guys really well now is it was really good. And not that last year was any issues, because it's a really welcoming team, but just racing with them, they probably know me a bit better as well, which makes it easier. We had a team time trial, and basically we had a pretty hit squad there, with guys like Cam Meyer, Sam Buehlin, and Damien House, and those guys are best in the business when it comes to a triple T. So, and then the rest of the guys were pulling incredibly. No one, we didn't have a single weak link, so we won that, which meant that us climbers got already an advantage on other GC leaders from other teams, so yeah, that always makes it a bit easier. I think actually Damo come into the race as the leader. He's been in great shape at Torino. I think he was with Adam, he was riding amazingly, so he was leader at this race. And I think the thing was, it was a little bit difficult to control this race early on, which always means that has to sort of keep your options open a little bit. And Damo gave me all clear to follow moves on the last lap on the GC day, which which we sort of had to because the Damo couldn't cover everything and it was a bit of luck of the draw which one you went with. So when Lander went, I saw it coming a little bit earlier than Damo did and jumped on it straight away and everyone else sort of sat up and it was a hard, hard climbing day. So I think not many had the legs. The only other guy who probably had really good legs was Damo. So, yeah, it just shows the level of guy Damo is by letting that go and not having any issues. So, yeah, and then obviously Lander and I went to the line and he rolled me. But anyway, then when I took the jersey, yeah, it was from then onwards, I don't think I touched the wind once from when I took the jersey. The team, everyone was in such good shape that it deterred a lot of attacks. So, yeah, going into the last hour, I was stressed about Lander attacking. He's one of the best climbers in the world. And to have a guy like that not far off you on GC, it's nerve-wracking. But, yeah, I think that's all part of the experience. But also I knew that we had the strongest team in the race. And I think every time the hammer went down, there was still so many of us left that it deterred a lot of attacks because they knew that I was protected by a lot of guys. And that's proven by that we finished 1-2-3 on GC, first time in the history of the race. So, yeah, it's not just luck that ended up getting us that. It's just the strength we had. Some big reds after the race. Straight from the podium and straight on the flight home. Had a nice pizza and a beer, though, at the Boulogne Airport for the second year running. So, yeah, but it's always nice with the team and the results we had, winning the Triple T, obviously, having all the guys there and going 1-2-3. And I think everyone was really happy with their race because everyone was just riding so well. And we basically just controlled every stage. And, yeah, I think it was pretty impressive, actually. What's next is Pays Basque, a race I did last year. I've got a small race before that, GP Indurain. I love that area of Spain and really looking forward to it. Hopefully the weather hangs out all right. It's been beautiful here so far. So, yeah, that's what's next for me now. And then... yeah, we'll see where we go from there.
Should we go to point number three maybe then? We'll talk the green edge. They've got Esteban Chavez, Jack Haig, Lucas Hamilton, Mikel Nieve, Schulze, part-time climber.
Throw him in there.
Throw him in the mix. Simon Yates, Adam Yates. There's
they got Brent Bookwater in the squad. Yeah. He's kind of like that part-time.
And Damo. Damo goes all right too. So... it's a genuine climbing squad, but they've spread their main men over the three grand tours. The question is, why wouldn't they put that squad to the tour? Everyone targets the tour. Mitchelton Scott, obviously looking for a sponsor, win the Tour de France. It's a pretty attractive prospect, but it'd be a ballsy move.
I don't know. Do you think it's maybe a little bit of... little bit scared to take on Team Sky?
Or is that more intelligent to have just one rider?
What do you mean?
Well, so if you're going on the tour with Esteban and the two Yates bros as your main guys.
Going with three blokes.
Is it too much?
Well, I think you've actually spoken about this a lot, that you don't like the two leader.
I don't like it. But if you're going to win the tour and if you're going to beat Team Sky, that might be what it takes.
They definitely got the horsepower on paper. But I think the pressure of the TDF, never done the TDF, never done a Grandi, but it just seems like the Tour de France is just completely different. It's just like everyone says, it's just a complete different kettle of fish, and it's just a step up from anything else. So maybe they're just happy lurking around the Giro and the Vuelta for now, trying to win some more of those, and then eventually once the Yates bros are maybe, you know, they 27 now, maybe in their late 20s, 29, 30, then throw them into the TDF. So I think they're probably just, they're playing not the safe game, but putting their eggs into a basket that's probably a little bit more achievable, I think, Alex.
Do you think there's a bit of interest around what where the Yates Bros go, stay, what their objectives are? Or do you think they're just they're going to be there forever?
Well, they seem pretty content, don't they? And it was Mitchelton that gave them the chance. Like, they're British boys. Simon was an academy boy. He came through the track program. Adam was kind of...
on the French
circuit. Not the black sheep, but yeah, he was in like doing French amateur racing, and then they both crushed it at Lavernier, and then they both signed for Mitchelton. So I don't know, if they showed, you know, I'm sure they're quite loyal already. I'm sure they've had plenty of opportunity to go elsewhere. They've been there from the start of their career. They've won a Grandy. I imagine that they'd be happy to stay there and just keep doing what they're doing.
So if you were the GM of the team, you got the call on where you put who, what would you do?
I mean, I guess you try and win them all, wouldn't you? You got three proper good riders. Just give them one each. Send some helpers. Maybe the helpers do two out of the three. And maybe if you do the Giro, you don't succeed, then you're going for the Tour or for the Vuelta. But I think they could probably try and do them all.
Bull by the horns, man.
Bull by the horns. Like you said, they got the resources. They got the horsepower.
And point number three, Milan San Remo. I write this one down. I just don't really get it. Like, it's too...
It's the history, Alex.
That is it.
1907.
That is it, though. There's 290-something kilometres. Well, when we watched it, we went out and then came back and then watched the end. Like, you literally don't need to watch anything. And unless there's a real showdown, which there wasn't really a showdown this year. It was just like, right, I just went off the front.
It's the same final every time.
It's, yeah. I don't know about it.
What do you mean? What do you mean you don't know about it? You just don't like it?
I just don't know if I'm a huge fan of it.
Is it because it starts so late as well? That's late.
The other thing.
It's like a 3:30 finish.
And then the other thing is I don't like the fact that the organisers sold the rights to Eurosport. I think that's the silliest thing they've ever done.
Same as the Giro.
Yeah, I know. Same organiser. Yeah. Same owners. I think that's one. The race is going to face some challenges going forward as it is so long. Two, they're just making those challenges even more by excluding the rights just to Eurosport. They're literally just hanging on to the history and that monument tag that it's got.
Well, yeah, it's got the history. It's got the years under its belt. It's also the longest race, which, you know, that's pretty cool. You say we are the longest race in the world. And the winner, you never know who the winner's going to be. It's the final, you don't know. Vincenzo Nibali's won, the part-time sprinters have won, the full-time sprinters have won. So it's a course that everyone kind of feels like they're a chance on their day.
But do you just think the first 200 kilometres is a bit of a waste of time?
Well, you need that, don't you, to just take the...
to be the world's longest race.
Well, yeah, for a start, you need
to... Do you think it makes a difference that it is that long in terms of your condition?
I think so. I think anything over... probably anything over 6 hours, you're probably going to get the same kind of result. But anything over between 6 and 8, I think it's all the same, isn't it?
Yeah. If 5 and 8?
Huh?
Even 5?
There's a lot of stages in Grandies that are over 5, but rarely do they go over 6. I think as soon as you crack that 6 hours, not only physically, but just mentally, just being focused for that long, things can start to go wrong. But I don't know. I can see what you mean by you're not too sure on it, but it does have a lot of things going for it, I think.
What, the history?
The history, the final, and it presents a rider that can be any kind of rider. Cavendish has won, Alaphilippe's
probably
won.
Probably the Viviani, the Nincenzo last year winning was probably the epitome of that race. Yeah. Like, the bunch is coming. Yeah. Sole rider off the front.
I think Fabian Cancellara might have won solo as well. But
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't mind it. But I can see what you mean.
Question time. Are you going to answer them?
We can answer them together.
River Massard, chances of Alaphilippe winning a Grandy? I think that's in the context of, for, like, in his career.
He's 26 or 27. He's born in the same year as me, 92.
He's pretty old.
He's old as, man. He's He's got a lot of time off his sleeve though. Let's be honest. Let's, you know, all jokes aside.
And he's a genuine talent.
He's got he's got at least 5 more years of like peak physical condition, and we've seen that he can climb pretty much with the best. He's won, well, he won the KOM jersey, the Tour de France. That doesn't really reflect really that you're the best climber in the race at all. But he's won on like higher mountain stages. He can do it. He can do a okay TT.
Can throw himself down a descent.
Throw himself down a descent. He can pick up some bonus seconds along the way. I think for sure, if he wanted to, if he wanted to shift his focus completely to Grandies, I can't see why he wouldn't be able to challenge. What do you think?
Yeah, I think as he becomes older, especially the way that he's winning, like he's winning so much, it's not like, oh geez, like I need to just make sure I keep those results coming. He just wins everything. Mm. That, and his personality, I think, yeah, as he progresses older, if he focuses on that more endurance part of cycling, yeah, why not?
He won California in 2016.
Yeah, I guess
he can do it.
I guess the next step is just like winning those 1 week tours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
remember people like can Peter Sagan win a Grandy? Like no chance. Like no. Alaphilippe's a lot of a smaller unit. Like he's someone that could actually do it.
Mm. Nathan Elliott, should Hagee be in the TDF team?
Well, of course.
Like if you're taking the A squad, yes.
Yeah, he's definitely capable. Whether he chooses, I think he's doing the Giro, isn't he?
He's doing the Giro.
So no, he's probably not going to be able to be at top shape for the Tour de France, but 100% if he wanted to, I'm sure he could say, "Yep, let me do the tour, guys. I'll be 100% there. I'll be the last man for the leader." So it'd be interesting to see what they do with that. But it looks like it's going to be the Giro at the moment.
Tom Hamilton, would you prefer top 5 in the Classic or top 10 in a Grandy? He hasn't specified which races, so I'm going to put on that Paris-Roubaix or the Tour. Is that what you think?
Top 10 in the Tour de France, 100%, 100%. What do you think, Tom? Come and grab the mic.
All right, he's just changed his question.
I think a better comparison would be winning Roubaix or third in the Tour de France. What would you prefer? Third Tour. No, third in the Tour. Come
second twice.
Are we talking financially for the rest of your life?
Just the whole package, man. Like.
Hang on. So, what's the question,
Tom? Tom, rephrase it differently. What was your?
What's the question?
Can I rephrase the question?
Yeah. No, I just thought that was a better comparison. It actually got a little bit of conversation.
What's your question? Win Roubaix or top 3 in the Tour?
Yeah.
Tom Hamilton. Would you rather top 3 in the Tour or win Paris Roubaix?
I think we just went through it.
Top 5.
We haven't got it on record.
I do. I was here. That was good.
Yeah, but you're talking to him. Does that still work?
I can cut something together.
Yeah.
It'll be a little bit jumbled, but
let's just go from the top.
Yeah, we can go from the top again.
I'm coming in mid-season.
We should have got a third mic and just have it just for the roaming, the crowd mic.
In terms of shipping in season, I'll come in and sort your boys out, right? Top 5, and say the Giro.
Yep.
So it's not the Tour now.
Let's not be so fucking. Let's be specific. So, win Roubaix or top 3 at any Grand Tour.
Well, there's a big difference between top 3 at the Giro and top 3.
Oh, which one would you take?
Take the Tour every time.
Okay, let's go. Let's ask the question.
Tom Hamilton, would you rather win at Paris-Roubaix or run top 3 at a Grand Tour? Go.
I think I'd rather a podium in a Grand Tour. Tour de France, you get that shot on the Champs. That goes a long way, but at the same time, you win Roubaix. Stewie O'Grady, he did a lot before he won Roubaix, but everyone knows in cycling that he won Roubaix. You get that photo in the Velodrome. With the cobblestone, everyone knows you've got all the respect. Go and ask Matt Heyman. He's like, yeah, man. Like when I was getting dropped in the Tour, guys that were with me were like, oh, we're all right. Like we're with Matt Heyman. You know what I mean? Like, But third in the Tour de France, I think you'd probably take that. What do you reckon?
I'd take third in the Tour as an Australian. If you're like a Belgian, you'd take Roubaix. But like, you win Roubaix as an Australian, you might get like a 10-second snippet on Channel 7 News. But if you win the Tour, like,
we're not winning the Tour.
You're not winning the Tour, but you're in the mixer to win the Tour.
I think you get a fair bit of press. You get a fair bit of podium.
Yeah, you get a lot more cred in Oz. Yeah. But if you win Roubaix over in the homeland, you'd be a big name.
Yeah, I concur.
But for me, I'd take top three in the Tour.
I think I'd...
Hang on, what was that?
If we're going, just switch that, not the Tour de France, third in the Vuelta versus first in Roubaix, I'd probably take first in Roubaix.
You take first in Roubaix, yeah.
As an Australian.
Yeah.
Or any
the Tour de France gets much bigger kudos than the other two.
Yeah. Yep.
Pumpstagram says, rules for the SSS wine night.
Well, you were the founder, so you can...
Well,
you can
we just did it. Well, everyone brought a bottle of wine. It was Milan San Remo night, so it was Italian theme. You had to have an Italian theme wine. Blind tasting, so you couldn't see the bottle, number the bottle, rank out of 10. Winner wins.
And there was some price points that were also important.
Yes, there was three price brackets: 0 to 10, 11 to 20, 21 to 30.
And also Jay Cummings went in the next price
bracket. 31 to 40. And James came second last. So yeah, that were the rules.
Who won again?
I won.
You won, yeah.
Yeah, I won.
And what price were you at?
$17.
Good little price point.
Yeah, it's a good price bracket.
That's a good bracket. That's a bracket you want to be operating in. I think that 10 to 20.
Yeah. Although second place was a $9 unit from Audi.
An Audi number.
Which is always good for a dark horse.
Well, your father's didn't you say that he was a wine? He's pretty big on his wine, and he had a $5 bottle, and he thought it was superb. So,
Luke Parker asks, "Is Lucas Hamilton the next Cadell?"
Possibly.
Trevor Daly. Is that what we're giving him?
Yeah. Well, what else?
Trevor Daly.
His pocket all night.
Is Sagan losing his touch, or has everyone just gotten better?
Well, Alex, I don't know. He hasn't looked super, has he?
I'm pretty good at getting well. We're going to made the move. Put his hat in the ring.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you had told Peter Sagan 2 years ago you make the front group and get in Wevelgem, you'd be pretty happy with that, wouldn't you? Like, it's, you know, we always expect him to be in the front.
He's a sole wolf too, doesn't he?
But yeah,
really.
I think, what was it? Oh, was it E3? I can't remember what it was, but he just got blown out the back of the breakaway when GVA just attacked like a madman up that hill. Sagan's just going out the back. It's like, well, even if he's not in his top shape, you still expect him to be there. So, I don't know, maybe
the next
just,
2 weekends will be telling.
They will, and I think it's...
For all of these riders, like Terpstra with his new squad, like how Quick-Step go there again, if they can continue. I think the two big dances are the next 2 weekends.
They are, yeah. We can't read too much into what's happened, but his best result so far in the Classics campaign was fourth at San Remo, and we thought he was going to dust up that sprint, and he got nowhere near it. But I don't know, Alex. I think Josh put out an article a few days ago with trying to create a little bit of a chat that maybe is Alaphilippe the new best rider in the world,
On the website if you want to check it out.
And possibly I'd have to say for sure at this point in time I'd take Alaphilippe over Sagan.
Rob Powell, who's going to win more monuments in his career, MVDP or WVA?
Well, so far you'd have to say Wout van Aert because he's actually proven himself. But Matthew van der Poel, he's a big, big talenter.
Yeah. I think they'll be going head-to-head for a while.
They've been going head-to-head for cyclocross for years, but I'm looking forward to the new rivalry.
Who's going to win more?
Who's going to win more right here, right now? I'll say Matthew van der Poel.
Andrew Cunningham, what's Esteban up to? Is he done as a GC contender or focusing on the back half of the year? He was at Catalunya doing the job for Yates, I believe. Didn't tune in, so I wouldn't know. I think Chavez, or based off that he's been doing his work for the Yates bros, will be firing for the back end of the year. I think he came off a tough year last year. Tour would be a big ask, and I think the Yates bros have proven their condition to go.
So where do you reckon he'll be at? Do you reckon he'll do a couple of grandies or?
Giro Welter.
The Giro Welter double, maybe.
Giro in support, Welter for the win.
Yeah. I think it'd be pretty rough to write him off as a GC. He's 29. He's only 29.
Yeah, he's a young boy.
He's young. He looks like he's about 19. But, yeah, pretty lean year. He's done Paris-Nice. He's done Catalunya. No, I don't think he's even been in the top 10 once this season, but we know what he can do. He's been second at the Giro before. I think it'd be silly to write him off as a GC rider, and I think, yeah, the Vuelta at the back end of the year probably where we'll see him at his peak.
We've got one more question, actually, from Lachlan. Lockie JM on Insta. Do you agree with the local level of bike racing in Australia is in serious trouble? I haven't been on the ground for a while. You?
Well,
you're on the ground. You're an informed communications manager.
Yeah, I'm just with them at the NRS. Does he mean more of kind of the club scene, you think?
Yeah, mate.
Well, I don't know. When were you back in our day doing the club racing down in Taz? It was pretty good. The handicaps were good.
Interesting. Talking to the Cycling Taz people, they say the veterans has gone bananas. Like, can't keep a hold of it. There's too many guys, but struggling to get juniors.
Yeah. Well, I think in any sport, I think they're struggling to get participation from
sport
juniors.
Sport is getting more and more competitive, and the biggest competitor of all, online gaming.
Yeah.
So, to answer that question, I think all sports are struggling on the junior scene. We're actually going on the Ararat Junior Tour to help out Bruce Hamilton in a couple of weeks. So, we'll actually be able to give you a more accurate answer then.
See all the kids on their flashy TT bikes.
Yeah, yeah. Bought them this week?
Yeah, dad just in their grill on the turbo 90 minutes before the race, telling them to keep their heart rate up, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare.
Make sure you get your aero helmet purchased before that down to 14 TT.
Shit in the eye.
I think that's all for today, Campbell. If you haven't already, check out your podcast with David Spindler that you released last week. It's an absolute doozy. He's got some good theories. He's a cluey man.
He's a cluey man, but he's just a man that keeps things simple. He doesn't overcomplicate. Well,
that's why he's
things.
Smart.
Yeah,
because he can make complex things simple.
Yeah,
That one we do that on like Andre Lagerche. It was like explain the most complicated thing in the world to the punter down the street.
Yeah,
that's when you're cluey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wayne
Schwoss got around it as well, which we love.
He got around it too, and I think we'll get a pucker up update from him pretty soon after they complete a round two. And that's all. Thanks to Matt for supporting the podcast. We'll see you back at the Social Club next time.